Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, how many instruments can you play?
Well, actually, Jim, I can play the piano, synthesizer, harmonica, congas, drums, bongos, organ, melodica, and clavinet.
That's odd. Those are the exact same instruments that Stevie Wonder can play.
Yes, I know.
All right, it's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking Motown the last couple of days because I just went to the Motown Museum in Detroit. Had a great time.
And I got a question for you about that. So have you been to Sun Studio?
I have.
So compare those two experiences.
All right, that's good. So it's been a long time since I went to Sun Studio.
Yeah.
That was like late 80s that went there.
Mm-hmm. I took the whole family there on a vacation once. Yeah.
And you mentioned the raiding the bathrooms or something?
Yeah, that's right. MJ was all about raiding bathrooms on that trip. It was pretty painful, Jim. We used to have a thing when our daughters were younger, like, you know, not too dissimilar from what you're talking about, you know, with the Gordy family. We would each make our case for which vacation we would take because we only had 1 week, basically, then. And 1 year I won. I talked everybody into going to Nashville. So basically we went to Dollywood. Then we went to Nashville, Memphis, did all the tourist spots everywhere, went to Graceland. You know, the kids hated it pretty much the whole way, but they're glad now that they went. But
I went to Memphis once on a college spring break trip.
Oh, wow.
So I like had
a bowl game there or something?
No, I had some pretty cool friends, and we decided instead of like Florida or any of that kind of stuff, we would rent a van. And drive down to Memphis from Indiana.
That's awesome.
And we stopped in Nashville. I don't remember that we didn't do a ton in Nashville. You got to remember, Nashville in the late 80s wasn't as cool as it is now.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it was a different place.
We weren't really that interested in Nashville, but we did stay in a hotel that had a guitar-shaped pool.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So we did that. And then, but then we went to Memphis and we did tour Sun Studios, but when I say tour, it's literally like one room.
It's tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you kind of shuttle in and then they move you like 4 feet to the left and then you look in the control room and that's it.
So Hitsville, USA and Studio A is a little bit bigger than that.
Okay.
Only because what you get to tour at the Motown Museum is essentially really like two buildings. It's the building that's been sort of converted into the museum, but it was like offices and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Berry Gordy's residence was upstairs. And then like the next house over is where Studio A is.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim that was open like 24/7. So people could come in like anytime,
really
day or night and just, you know, record, put down ideas.
4 a.m.
That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you asked about the difference. And I do think the thing that kind of blew me away, because they're both very small studios.
With rich history, obviously.
Right. But with Sun, you kind of get it. Like, okay, it was mid to late 50s, and they were basically inventing rock and roll.
Right.
And so the idea that it would be in this sort of modest storefront and just like a room, and with that very kind of stripped down rockabilly sound for the most part was coming out of there, you're sort of like, okay, I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. The thing that's striking about Motown is after decades of hearing these records and sort of how big they sound and sort of how many tracks they must have laid down, how much, you know, instrumentation went into all of that with horns and sometimes strings and, you know, just this kind of these great mixes of pop music that you almost can't believe it was recorded in this such a small
space. I see what you're saying.
You know, you expect that it's like what Phil Spector had out on the West Coast.
I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And Sun had the slap back and sort of the stripped down thing that kind of sounded the same every time. It wasn't nearly as rich and deep and varied. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're almost just kind of blown away.
That's
like,
wild.
How did they do this?
Yeah.
And they have a piano on display there in the studio. It apparently was a like Victorian era Steinway.
Mm.
So literally for like the 1800s that they used to record a lot of that stuff. And it had fallen into disrepair over the years. And after the museum, you know, kind of took over the studio, and it's no longer a working studio, but it's preserved the way it was. They were giving a tour, and one of the, this is what our tour guide told us. Mm-hmm. One of the people on the tour asked about, asked if he could play the piano. And they said, well, it's, you know, it's not really playable right now. It's hasn't been working for some time.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I would like to pay to have it restored. Okay.
Wow.
And that guest was Paul McCartney.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's a great story.
Yes. So there's that. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's just a place that it really is. It's hard to describe. It really is kind of like magical, and you get this like feeling when you're in there. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard thing to describe, but it's almost like you can just feel that something great happened here.
I can feel the vibe.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. So let's get to part three of interview I did with Paul Barker. He's the director of development at the Motown Museum. In this segment, he talks about plans for expanding the museum. They're going to do a whole big thing there.
Exciting.
They're raising money for it. It's going to be a massive expansion. So that'll really add a lot to the whole experience. The houses, though, on West Grand Boulevard are going to remain. So, you know, I mentioned there's a couple of them there, but over time, Motown ended up buying more and more houses to use for different offices and such. They actually even at one point had one of the houses was used for what they called like quality control. So after they would finish recording, they would have these little meetings where they'd sit, a group of people would sit and listen to the record and be able to sort of pick it apart and maybe send it back for some more work, which apparently was something Barry Gordy learned from when he worked on an automotive assembly line.
Yeah, right. That was part of the theory in putting those songs together. Yeah.
So anyway, all those houses are going to remain, but they're going to have they've cleared out some other land. There's going to be a big museum behind, and we're going to hear about that. And then Paul's also going to talk about his favorite Motown artist. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And here is part three of the interview. So what do you do today to sort of move the legacy of Motown forward? I know you're doing some work with like kids for summer camps and things like that. And there's like spoken word competitions or that kind of thing here, right? So tell me some of the things that make it, you know, sort of a living endeavor as opposed to just always a reflection of the past.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, the expanded museum, which we're striving for in the next couple of years, will be a 50,000 square foot facility. And what this will do is create capacity for us. There are a number of times that people come to the existing location and we're sold out. Like they can't simply come through. And so they'll just take a picture out front and so on. So one of the things we want to do is expand the facility so we have a place to properly tell the story with space and interactive experiences, and also preserve the existing houses that are on the boulevard. So even though we're going to grow, what exists here will not change. Hitsville will never change. It will be exactly what it always was. But the expanded museum will allow for additional programming. We want to become a hub for our community and transform the West Goldberg community that we reside in here and continue to create opportunity with jobs. We'll have over 200 jobs that are created for this expansion. And our programming, we want to do, as we currently do, summer camps for kids at two different age groups. We have a spoken word series that speaks to poets and spoken word artists. We are about to launch a vocal competition that will give opportunity for singers in the next frame. But what we want to also do is create an entrepreneurship program, something that will give people an upstart, a place to create their idea and find their identity. It doesn't have to be music related, and it doesn't have to be in the show business field, but just a place where they can come with a solid idea and they're paired up with mentors in the business community who can help them work out their idea and launch it here on site. And so that's another part of the program that we're going to grow into. And just lots of community engagement, building exhibits with our community. People here have stories. They lived here for 60 years. They were here the whole time. They have items and things, and we want to share that with people, and we want to give the people in our community a platform to hold their community meetings and things of that nature. We just want to be a great source for our local community, but also a place where people coming from far and wide can see the story that inspired it all. So as we grow, it's our vision to continue the success that Motown made, but use its history as the evidence that it can be done.
Right, right.
So in the future, we're going to try to spawn that next entrepreneur or that next artist or that next creative person, and continue to be a person in a community that may have its challenges, but give people an outlet or a place where they can come and have a voice.
And I've seen the artist renderings of the planned expansion. I mean, you're going to take over. It's going to be really built up sort of behind the houses, right?
Yes. So as discussed, the houses on West Grand Boulevard that we currently own that were historically part of the Motown company will just stay. They will be restored, and that will become part of the learning center that mm-hmm. we're going to build. And behind us, the property that used to exist, it's now been cleared, is where the expanded museum and galleries and things of that nature will go, including our theater and new entrances, parking, things of that nature.
Nice, nice. And so the time frame on this is all a couple of years out?
It is. Unfortunately, most campaigns, you know, people don't launch them publicly until they've raised a certain amount of money. But with something as high profile as the Motown Museum expansion campaign, the message leaked early. So there's a higher demand for it, higher expectation for it. But the pressure's on us because unlike anyone else, I mean, or like, excuse me, like everyone else, we have to earn that money every dollar at a time, you know, each dollar at a time.
Right.
We are blessed with this great identity and this great brand, but with respect to that and with respect to donor dollars, we are taking every step necessary to build a proper business plan, to be financially stable, to understand where all of our incomes will be, to make sure that this program is sustainable and solid, so that when we do go into the ground and we're building the pieces in their phases, we're prepared and it's sustainable, because we owe it that respect, and we owe the donors that respect. So it's going to take whatever time it takes, but it's going to be done right.
One thing I noticed when I was on the tour was, and I think you mentioned this a little bit, there are families, there are parents who bring their kids, things like that. And I always have to think to myself, like, do these kids even know, like, what a 45 was mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, right? I mean, where do you think it exists sort of in today's music culture? You know, where everything is now digital and streaming and sort of, you know, less tangible, and, you know, music to kids growing up today maybe doesn't quite mean the same thing as it did to us growing up. You know, how does Motown, I guess, continue to sort of exist in that climate?
Well, I think it exists in two ways. Well, probably a few ways. I'll say this about how it exists currently. I can't speak for the record company.
Right, right, right. I don't mean that.
I mean, just in general.
Yeah.
The music industry is constantly striving to stay constant with advancements in technology and so on. So that took a lot of the tangible love for music appreciation away. For example, I'm a fan that I used to love to get the new album, pull out the liner notes,
right,
read the lyrics, see who played on the sessions, background vocalists. You'll see somebody was a guest star on the record. You didn't even hear them. You got to go back and listen to it. There's that kind of interaction with the product you bought that is missed. So I think that's why people are segueing back to vinyl, because number one, you can hear the music in a different way. This is something that doesn't get talked about a lot. When people are striving for the best sound, they buy these surround sound systems that they play their home stereo on, their TVs on. So they're not made for music anymore. You know, when I grew up, you would go to the stereo store and buy a record player that was meant to play records.
Right.
People would test the speakers by playing records on them, you know, if it sounded good. Motown used to mix records with car speakers because they wanted to know what it would sound like in a car.
Yep, yep, exactly.
There's care and love put into making music, but when you're not playing it on a system that it was created for, you can't appreciate the sound. So when you go and you play it on an old phonograph and you take the balance and you turn it all the way left one way, you kind of lose the vocals and you only hear certain instruments. And then you turn it the other way and you only, now you hear the vocals and like one or two instruments.
Right.
It kind of separates it and breaks it down so you can appreciate it a little more. Nowadays, you get in there and you just hear this loud music. You lose a lot of definition. You use a lot of things. So people, for their appreciation of the sound, are kind of going back to vinyl. And in another way, like number two, I guess, would be they like to physically have something. Mm-hmm. Like they want to have evidence of this love. You know, not everything has to be intangible. So I think organically, people are just going back to the demand for vinyl. And I know that it's such a big sale now that it has its own place on the Billboard charts now for vinyl sales. Yeah. And artists are doing limited releases on vinyl again. Like the Beatles released their entire catalog on vinyl again.
Right.
And in this amazing box set that you go out and you just buy. And you play it at home and you play it at your time. And, you know, there's just some fun to that. So I think the rediscovery of music is a great thing. And another way that it kind of helps artists too is that because it's not digitized, the kind of stealing of their music, that, you know, the safe transfer is not as easy anymore. And so it kind of helps the artists a little bit too. But I think at the end of the day, people just want that appreciation for sound.
Do you have a favorite Motown artist?
What day of the week is it? Tuesday? Tuesday would be Stevie Wonder Day. I always have, it. Honestly, it depends on your mood,
whoever
speaks to you at the moment. But I think if I had to single out one, it would be Stevie Wonder. I think he's probably the most incredible. People throw around the word genius a lot. That is not just thrown out there for Stevie Wonder. He's just ridiculously talented. And, you know, to think about this is somebody who was born blind, you know, he made his way, came to Motown as a young man, 10 years old, could already play drums and harmonica. And, you know, his second album, people don't talk about it, but like his second album was all like instrumentals of him playing all these different records. Or was it his first album? I have to go back and look. But he also recorded an album later in the 60s that he retitled I've It's Red Now, which is Stevie Wonder spelled backwards, which was just all instrumentals and him playing music. I think where he really prospered was with Intervisions, which I believe this year is like the 45th anniversary of Intervisions. And Stevie Wonder played virtually every instrument on that entire album and produced and wrote and put it all together. And what was he, 23 years old?
Yeah. Like,
ridiculous.
It's insane.
And 4 days after its release, he was almost killed in that car accident that sent him into a coma for a couple of days.
Right.
And, you know, he almost died. But he came out of that and just continued to flourish with music and had a whole new perspective. And so a lot of people say like Intervisions was something that was spawned from that accident, but it was already done. It was already released. I think it just took on different meaning for him. And but yeah, Stevie Wonder is just a phenomenal human being. And not just as a musician and as a writer, but as a social justice person. You know, he sees a cause and he's not afraid to put himself forward and have an opinion and have something to say. And what he has to say is relevant and smart and thought out. I mean, he amplifies everything that success is. So I just love Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, that's a great way to end this. So thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
All right.
He's a man with a plan, got a counterfeit dollar in his hand. He's Mr. Know-it-all, playing hard, talking fast, making sure that he won't be the last. He's Mr. Know-it-all.
Okay, it's hard to argue with Stevie Wonder.
No.
Right?
I don't know how you can.
I mean, I was thinking myself, favorite Motown artist, if somebody asked me that, and I think immediately I'd go to Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, mm-hmm. probably
yeah,
one
Marvin
and one
Gaye
A.
Would be up there. Right, right.
I think if I were going to go a little bit deeper, I mean, again, you know, you got the Jackson 5,
yeah.
you got the Supremes. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just think about this roster of talent that came through there, right?
I would throw the Temptations in there, Jim. They're one of my all-time favorites.
Temptations.
Think of some of the things they did, right?
Well, they were great because they had sort of two different
yeah.
eras, kind of like Marvin Gaye, right?
Yeah.
They had that kind of classic R&B area, but then they went and did some, you know,
experimental stuff
yeah. a little bit later on.
Blew me
with
away.
The Papa Was a Rolling mm-hmm. Stone and all of that.
Yeah.
yeah, it was great. But you know, actually, one of my favorites, and they didn't have maybe quite as many hits as, say, the Temptations, or definitely like Stevie Wonder, but mm-hmm. one that I always just really loved, I think just for their like sheer vocal power, was the Four Tops.
Oh, yeah.
Levi Absolutely. Stubbs and all that. I mean.
Reach out. I'll be there, man.
It's really great.
Yeah.
And the same old song. And
wow.
You know, those songs are just, they're great to listen to on headphones or earbuds. They just sort of blast through your brain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
well, they mixed the car speakers. So.
They did. That's exactly right. right. That's exactly it. I mean, the Four Tops is a great example of that. That's a yeah. song made for playing, you know, on a car stereo
oh, yeah.
or
Absolutely.
On a little radio or mm-hmm. whatever. It just blasts right through.
Cut
so.
Through.
All right. So I want to thank Paul for sitting down
yes.
and talking with me. It was really great fun. And you should listen, though, to all these episodes, because you should listen how often,
every
Patrick?
Day.
Every day, Rock yeah. in the Suburbs. You can hear us on all the big podcast platforms. You can, if you'd like, rate and review the show on Apple
help.
Podcasts. We would appreciate that. Also, visit our website, suburbspod.com.
Yeah, it's right there.
And
you've thrown the gauntlet down now, Jim. You've gone on an interview to top my interview. The ball's back in my court.
I don't know if it tops, but you know. But it was fun. It was
really fun. And when I say top, I mean it's the most recent one.
Yeah, that's it.
I need to get one going here.
But it was fun. Rocking the Suburbs on the road.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell us what you think of Motown music or anything else music related. You do that by calling and leaving a message,
612-440-1984.
Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. At suburbspod. So let's play out with a little Stevie Wonder.
All right.
How about some Living for the City?
That's perfect.
All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
Patrick Foster here.
We'll talk to you next week.
A boy's born in hard-time Mississippi, surrounded by four walls that ain't so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction. Living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet he barely makes a dollar. His mother goes to scrub the floors for meaning, and you best believe she hardly gets a penny. Living just enough for the city. Yeah.
That was good stuff, though.